Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, loft, your parents' basement, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we are coming to you live once again from Coast's Toronto affiliate Talk Radio AM 640, and it is downright tropical, or has been, in Toronto. In fact, yesterday, this is kind of a rare event. Now, if you're down in Tornado Alley in the United States, you know, not a big deal. But up here, tornadoes are pretty rare. We had an EF1 level tornado that touched down yesterday just southeast of Lake Simcoe up in York region, which is not too far from where I'm sitting. But this, it's been really humid up here. And I'm not, I have to admit, not a real summertime guy. I'm kind of itching for winter, but when it's so humid, you get out of the shower and then you perspire just toweling off, and then you got to get right back in the shower, and it's, you could spend all day in the shower. Anyway, that's not a big complaint. First world problems, right? You know what? Like a lot of kids, I had a box of comic books stashed under my bed, and I was into trying to remember. I think I was into the Fantastic Four and the Submariner. Do you remember him? The Submariner, or Submariner, I suppose. The Submariner. He sort of looked like Spock, but he was underwater. And Batman, of course. I was into Batman. I wasn't a serious collector, though. I didn't keep them in pristine condition like a lot of my friends. I wasn't thinking about, you know, one day these will be worth something. In fact, I'd like to think, you know, if I was around back in, I don't know, the 1920s, I probably would have taken the Honus Wagner rookie card and pegged it between the spokes of my bike. Am I dating myself? I don't know. Do kids do that still? Do you remember you used to peg playing cards, hockey cards, baseball cards on your bike spokes to make that cool clicking sound, to make it sound like a motorcycle? Anyway, I digress. But yeah, comic books. Speaking of comic books, they are, and graphic novels, huge, huge business these days. And it's not just the kids that are into them. Every Sunday, it's kind of a ritual, I take my boys to a comic book shop here in town. It's called Harry Tarantulas. And a couple of weeks ago, I surprised them. I bought an issue of, it's a brand new comic series, book series. It's called Cryptocracy. And it's about these nine families that have ruled the world from the shadows, for forever, like these ancient bloodlines, the Illuminati, I guess you would call them. And now, in this series, these nine families are being hunted. And so they have to, the leaders of the families have to sort of begrudgingly form this an alliance, come together in order to figure out, you know, who's stalking them, who's threatening them. Anyway, so I buy issue one of Cryptocracy. I had a little bit of a heads up on this. And I flipped it open. And there on one of the inside pages is a picture of me. And there's George Norrie is there, and Jesse Ventura, and Art Bell, and Clyde Lewis, and a lot of the people that toil in the radio vineyards doing programs like this. And we'll get into, why we're in there in just a moment. But so I show that to my little guys. And, you know, I'm in radio. They really don't care. I'm in television. They really don't care. But now, you see, I'm in a comic book. My stock has risen substantially. And I have the creators of Cryptocracy, Van Jensen and Pete Woods, to thank. And they are standing by. They're going to talk about the world of comic books. Or graphic novels, not the same thing, I understand that, but both very huge with today's youth. And so these two very talented individuals behind Cryptocracy, again, Van Jensen, he writes the comics, and Pete Woods does the illustrations. You may be familiar with them from their work with DC Comics. Cryptocracy is being published by Dark Horse. Anyway, Pete and Van will join me in hour one of the program to talk about Cryptocracy, what inspired them, the world of comic books and graphic novels, as I say, and we'll delve into their fascination with conspiracies and secret societies. In hour two of the program, yep, I've got another inventor I'd like you to meet. Last night, Paul Babcock, the inventor of the zero-back EMF motor, joined us from Spokane, Washington, to talk about magnets as the ultimate source of energy. Tonight, this morning, Kevin Collier of Salt Lake City will join us. He is obsessed with water, specifically figuring out ways of removing impurities from it, essentially washing water. As strange as that may sound, washing water, using his controlled gravity separation technology. So turning the most polluted water into potable water or drinking water, for example. And get this, another innovation for turning the backwater from fracking, which causes all kinds of problems. Now, this is essentially brine water. It's water with a heavy salt content. And you can't just dump it anywhere. But what's happening is, in the fracking industry, they're pumping this brackish water back into the earth. And what it does, it causes a whole host of problems. It disturbs the substrate underground when they pour this. They pump it at high speed, high velocity, back down into the ground, disturbs the substrate, and it causes earthquakes in places like Oklahoma. And as the United States is sort of, you know, trying to figure out how to earn energy or gain energy independence, and fracking is perhaps one of those ways, but how do you get around this issue of this backwater? You can't pump it back into the ground. You cause earthquakes. There is also some discussion that this backwater from fracking may, in fact, although it's disputed, but some are concerned that it can contaminate the ground table water, the aquifers down there in which many people draw their drinking water. So Kevin Collier and his team have figured out a way to turn that fracking backwater into a green energy source. We'll talk about that. It's all doable. It's proven. It works. And I think it's important to get this kind of information out before you, the Coast listener, because I don't have to tell you, the world seems to be going to hell in a handbasket at the speed of light. And sometimes it can become pretty easy to fall into despair. But there are lots of really smart people out there working on devices that will make a difference, will solve some of the world's big problems. And I'm pleased that we can bring another one of these stories to you tonight. Kevin Collier in hours 2 and 3, washing water. Then, finally, the last hour of the program. It's just you and me, kiddo. Open lines. You climb into the co-pilot seat and help me steer this mothership clear on into morning. So that's your lineup submitted for your approval. Now come on in. Hang your cloak on a peg. Grab a stool. Come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told. And you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Van Jensen is a former newspaper crime reporter and magazine editor who broke into comics as the writer of Pinocchio Vampire Slayer, which was named one of the top 10 great graphic novels for teens. He's the winner of the writer of Cryptocracy from Dark Horse, as well as a graphic novel adaptation of the first James Bond novel, Casino Royale. He's also written The Leg, the remarkable reappearance of Santa Anna's disembodied limb, and Green Lantern and The Flash for DC Comics. A native of western Nebraska, Jensen now lives in Atlanta. Van, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm good, Richard. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Pete Woods has been drawing comics for 20 years, from his work on the Harvey Award-nominated Deadpool to the New York Times bestsellers Superman, The Black Ring, and Superman New Krypton. Pete has drawn nearly every superhero under the sun. He resides with his family in the Pacific Northwest, where he works on the creator-owned book Cryptocracy with writer Van Jensen. Pete can easily be subdued with a gin and tonic. Pete Woods, welcome to Coast as well.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be here.
All right, the intro, just like we rehearsed it. A gin and tonic. Do you have one by the the phone there?
I do not. Tonight I have a rum and coke.
All righty. Well, first of all, I mentioned Harry Tarantulas, which is a comic book store. And the first time I went there, sold out. And I found out that issue one of Cryptocracy, just flying off the shelves, sold out across North America. Now, is that, I mean, this is an incredibly competitive field. I mean, this comic book store I was in, it's got to be 3,000 square feet, and just comic shelf after shelf after shelf of comic books. I mean, how difficult is it to sort of to launch a new comic book in this environment? Either one of you can jump in on that one.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think there are something like 500 plus issues of comic books that come out every single month. And, you know, those are dominated by Marvel and DC, the big superheroes that everyone knows and is familiar with already. But there's really a growing market for books that are new creations, which is what Cryptocracy is. So, you know, it's definitely it's a tough road to hoe, but I think if you have a book with a good concept that's quality, and of course, you know, with art like the work that Pete does, that doesn't hurt at all.
I should also point out that, I mean, you two, I mentioned both your names in the comic book store, and all of a sudden it was like a hush that came over the place. I mean, you guys are like rock stars.
I don't know, Pete, do you feel like a rock star?
No, I wouldn't call myself a rock star, but I appreciate, you know, a little name recognition now and again.
All right. I gave kind of a thumbnail sketch of this new series, Cryptocracy, but sort of fill that out for me a little bit. What is Cryptocracy all about?
Yeah, so this is a story that I kind of originally came up with several years ago, and was building, you know, in my head, and then working together with Pete. And I think for me, I mean, I've always been really interested in conspiracies and conspiracy theories, and you know, there's just all these works of fiction that delve into it. But there, you know, there's always the shadowy secret organization controlling everything, and they're just kind of faceless and evil. And, you know, there's no real reason for why they do what they do, or, you know, just they don't seem human, I guess. And so, you know, for me, it just kind of sparked this question of like, oh, well, you know, if such an organization actually did exist, and, you know, I think in our world today, there are organizations that are maybe not quite as extreme, but, you know, there are these sort of controlling groups, you know, why would they operate in the way that they operate, and what would be the challenges that they face, and what would their day-to-day existence be like? And, you know, it was just kind of a series of, you know, following that logic that built to this story. But that's kind of a long pitch. The quick pitch is it's kind of like if you saw X-Files from the side of the smoking man.
Right. Which is an interesting perspective, because certainly on programs like this, we tend to look at these secret societies, whether we're talking about the Illuminati, you know, these ancient bloodlines, the Bilderbergs, we kind of look at them as the bad guys. And you're sort of approaching this whole series from their perspective. So what would we call them, like anti-heroes?
Yeah, I guess that's probably the right term. I mean, the thing that I guess really resonated with me is, if there is someone who has this much power and they're making decisions, any decision that they make is going to impact, you know, thousands, if not millions of lives. So, you know, maybe they save lots and lots of people, but to do so, that means sacrificing a lot of people as well. And so, you know, from the side of the people who were saved, maybe they look like good guys, but from the side of the people who died, you know, they look like villains. So, I think that's kind of how people really are. You know, no one is completely good and no one's completely evil, or at least I like to think that.
Right. So there's some moral ambivalence and shades of gray, as you say. You know, we're not it's not all black hats and white hats. There's a lot of people wearing gray hats.
Yeah, absolutely.
Van Jensen, Pete Woods, the creative team behind this new comic book series called Cryptocracy, and issue one came out in July, and issue two is now on the shelves at your local comic book store. although that one may be gone as well, because it's proven to be wildly successful. It's selling out, and obviously touching a nerve, if you will, with comic book readers. What's the difference between a comic book and a graphic novel?
Pete, you want to jump in on that one?
There's different takes on a graphic novel and a comic book. Oftentimes, you'll go into a comic shop or a bookstore, and you'll find a graphic. We call it a trade paperback. It's a collection of 5 to 6 issues of the single issue of comics, which is often what you'll find on the shelves. But a true graphic novel is actually a self-contained story that exists solely for that book. It's not single issues collected.
All right. Now, as we flip inside issue one here, we see this big wall, and posted on the wall, almost like the most wanted pictures at the post office. We have, let's see here, 12 portraits. We've got Mr. George Norrie and Clyde Lewis and Jesse Ventura and Art Bell and yours truly, James Corbett, and yours truly down there in the corner. So just set this up. Why are all of us on this wall being looked at by, there's this huge bear character. Is he kind of like a chimera? I'm not sure.
He's a bugbear.
A bugbear. All right. So explain why George Norrie and Art Bell and Jesse and myself have been included. What's going on here?
Yeah, I think for Pete and I both, Coast to Coast and a lot of these other shows have been things that we, grew up with and have loved listening to and really influenced us. And as we started to talk about this story, and we realized how kind of integral the late night radio show is to this world, we decided to add a character that's effectively a host of a conspiracy themed radio show is sort of seeking to, reveal some truth. And so we had this idea of, okay, so they're hunting her and, trying to figure out how to, keep tabs on her and silence her as much as possible. So they have, this system in place to track, people who are threats. I think it was really your idea, Pete, to add in, all of these real world people into that list.
Well, yeah, I think we both wanted to show, some appreciation for the work that you guys do and the inspiration that shows like Coast to Coast have had on us. And that was a way to do it. And, one of our characters is a conspiracy show, host.
And the fact that we're on this wall and we're being watched by, members of these 9 secret families, what's the takeaway? Should we be worried?
probably no more than you already are. I guess for tonight, just take solace in knowing that you have fans in the comic book world.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't know, maybe I'm a little out of line here, but if you can work me into another issue, it would be great, because now that I'm in a comic book, my kids actually listen to me. They do what I say.
Let me know how that worked out, because mine don't listen to me.
Well, maybe you got to work yourself into an issue. I mean, yeah, there's a certain, as I say, radio, they don't care, TV, they don't care, but put me in a comic book, and now I've got bona fides. I'm the real deal. So thank you again for that. Now, Pete, let me ask you, in terms of how does this work as an illustrator? And because beautifully illustrated, some amazing, characters in here. But how do you lay this out? I mean, because each panel is kind of a storyboard. So how do you, it looks like a storyboard that you would see, in pre-production on a movie. So how do you plan this out? How do you begin sort of sketching out these characters? How long does that take, first of all?
Well, what happens is Zan writes out a script. He's got things broken down pretty well. So I've got a good description of everything that happens on the page. He breaks it down actually panel by panel. So we have little actions going on every page. Van's generous, and he lets me fiddle with things if I feel like I'd like to. But overall, he does a great job of breaking everything down. So storyboarding is a really good comparison, because that's very similar to what I do. And I'll sit down and I'll draw out a little quick sketch of the page. That takes me about 10 minutes or so, and then I'll lay it out more tightly, which takes me another hour or so, and then...
All right, Pete, I'm going to jump in here because we're going to take a time out. We'll come back and we'll drill down on that idea a little bit further. Pete Woods, Van Jensen, the creative team behind Cryptocracy. Here's Bonnie Raitt, Thing Called Love, taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. A futurist in the UK is predicting that super intelligent robots will be doing our housework by 2050. Bots will be able to hoover, that's what they call it in the UK, we call it vacuuming on this side of the pond, wash clothes, clean homes, within 35 years. And they could even be ordering your groceries by the year 2050. Well, I'll be 86, probably too late for me. Can't they speed that up a little bit? All right. George Norrie and his friends are living it up in Asheville, North Carolina, and that's happening August the 27th, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Hold on and get ready, and you're going to see a show like nothing else. Join three-time Emmy Award winner and host of Coast to Coast AM and star of Cryptocracy, George Norrie, for a night of fun as he welcomes ufologist Micah Hanks, the Paul Revere of our century, William R. Fortune, and paranormal investigator extraordinaire Joshua P. Warren. For more information, just visit the website coasttocoastam.com. Again, George Norrie and friends living it up in Asheville, North Carolina. That's August the 27th. All right. Two of the principals, the two creative minds behind Cryptocracy, Van Jensen, Pete Woods, and we'll also try to work in a few calls as well when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast's Toronto affiliate talk radio, AM 640. Van Jensen, former newspaper crime reporter, and the man behind, one of the men behind Cryptocracy, which is from Dark Horse Comics. And Van has also written Green Lantern Corps and The Flash for DC Comics. Pete Woods has been drawing comics for 20 years, and he worked on the Harvey Award-nominated Deadpool, to the New York Times bestsellers Superman, The Black Ring, and Superman New Krypton. And he is the illustrator of Cryptocracy. Now, Pete, before the break, I was asking you about how you sort of plan out the illustrations, and we sort of compared it to a storyboard. So I just wanted to finish up that thought.
Okay, cool. Sorry, I went a little bit long there because once I started talking shop, I just can't shut up. But basically, I'll summarize it. I get a script from Van, and I do a little thumbnail sketch, we call it. It takes about 10 minutes or so, and then I break down the page really roughly, and it takes another hour or so, and then all together, the rest of the page, I can usually finish a page in about one working day, anywhere from 6 to 14 hours, depending on how complex the page is.
Now, you have, as we mentioned earlier, you've drawn just about every superhero out there. How much license do you have? Let's say you're doing Superman. How much license do you have? I mean, that's pretty iconic. I mean, you know, getting to draw Superman. I mean, how much license do you have to sort of play around with that character?
Well, I like to think of it when they hire us, you know, either a writer or an artist, they hire us for, you know, our own unique spin. So I do take a few liberties, but I also try to respect the fact that these are characters that have been around for a long time, and you want to get them right. You want readers to look at those pages and think, yeah, that's exactly what I'd expect to see when I buy a Superman or a Batman comic. So, you know, you do little twists and turns, but overall you try to be loyal to the character and to the readership.
All right, so issue number 2 of Cryptocracy just came out. Van, how far in advance are you writing this? I mean, do you have sort of episodes or issues, rather, like you know, 10, 15 ahead in your mind, or do you, is it less than that? How does that work?
Yeah, I'm a very, I guess, structure and planning based writer. It's, I always kind of describe it as I tend to think of writing more as engineering than as a creative pursuit. So in a lot of ways, I'm a pretty boring creative person, but I do a lot of planning, a lot of thinking ahead. So, you know, I think by the time Pete started drawing the first issue of this, I think I had all of the first six issues already written. So there will be an initial six issue arc, and then the hope is that, you know, continued sales success will lead us to do more issues. So I haven't, you know, I haven't written anything beyond those initial six, but I certainly have, and, you know, Pete and I have made pretty good plans for a lot going forward. It's a big world, and, you know, we just have so much passion for conspiracies and conspiracy theories, and I think just taking kind of unusual approaches to familiar ones, but then also bringing in some ones that I think, you know, listeners of Coast to Coast would probably know anything that we're going to throw out there, but to, you know, more casual readers, some stuff that would be a little bit more of a deep cut. So hopefully we get the opportunity to delve into all of that.
Well, this type of comic certainly has legs, as they say, in the industry, because it's a rich vein to be mined when we're talking about conspiracies and secret societies and so forth. I mean, this could go on indefinitely, and I would think that would be your hope. But, I mean, how do you perceive the world? I know you're interested in conspiracies, but do you believe that this is the way the world operates, that history, for example, is kind of stage managed, and that there are some very powerful families that are actually working behind the scenes, kind of the puppet masters?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something where there's, I think there's a lot of kind of internal tension for me on that, because, you know, I used to be a reporter, so I'm a very skeptical person by nature. I need to, you know, see facts and see things right in front of me to believe in them. But then, you know, you look through the history of the world and you don't have to look very hard to find things that are just really bizarre, or, you know, all kinds of instances of very powerful, very wealthy people colluding with each other. I guess where I sort of draw the line is I think most people are motivated by greed. And so, you know, there are these very complex, convoluted conspiracy theories that, while extremely entertaining, there are many, many more obvious rationales for, you know, why certain things have happened. But again, I mean, there's a lot in this world that I think, you know, the average person doesn't know and doesn't see.
You mentioned, you know, you were a crime reporter, and to me, a good journalist and a good homicide detective are nothing if not conspiracy theorists, because you're always having to figure out, okay, who else is involved, who benefits. I mean, that is at the crux of what a conspiracy is, right? It is a crime. It's not just a theory. How about for you, Pete? How do you see what is your worldview? Is it informed by sort of this undercurrent of conspiracy?
Van and I really come from the same place in that regard. I like Hanlon's razor, you know, never attribute to malice what you can attribute to carelessness, but replace the word carelessness with greed. I think that things can look conspiratorial when people are just trying to position themselves above each other. So maybe it's the same thing, and maybe it's not. But I do believe that what we think of as conspiracies oftentimes are just a series of events that we see in retrospect as being a conspiracy, when it's actually, you know, somebody just trying to make a buck off somebody else, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I see greed as certainly as a primary motive, and I'm thinking, you know, when I think about the Bilderbergs, and you have these, you know, very very powerful individuals, families, many of them have been powerful for a very long time. I don't necessarily subscribe to this idea of these ancient bloodlines that are, you know, these Luciferians, you know, drinking blood from a human skull and. You know, sort of Dr. Evil with that maniacal laugh, but they are, what we can count on is that they are acting on their own behalf, and they're in their own self-interest, and their interests don't necessarily coincide with our interests. And when I say our, I mean us, like useless eaters, as sometimes we've been described as.
Absolutely, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that's been the most fascinating for me in terms of conspiracy in the past year or so has really been the reveal of the Panama Papers. And, you know, it just revealed that there is this wide-scale network of corruption and it spans the globe of people from every country who, you know, who are wealthy or powerful. They just want to protect the wealth that they have and gain more and, you know, work with each other and through different illegal networks to do that. And it, I mean, greed is just such a powerful and kind of terrifying force out there in the world.
Are some of these news headlines, are they going to work their way into cryptocracy, do you think? Are you going to try to weave these real-life conspiracies into the comic?
Yeah, that's the hope. You know, the first story arc, just kind of out of necessity, had to be written, you know, so far in advance that we didn't really have, you know, that sort of immediate responsiveness. I mean, the first issue has kind of a little winking reference to the David Cameron Piggate scandal, which I will not explain on the air. Readers or listeners are free to Google that one for themselves. But yeah, I mean, it's a super fascinating time, and so yeah, absolutely, it'd be great to delve into that. I mean, you look at the presidential election, and you know, you have on one side the Clintons, who have a, you know, decades of conspiracy theorists, you know, hounding them and seeing different things down to, you know, this supposed, you know, Hillary is dying and hiding it from everyone. And then, you know, Trump is both spouting conspiracy theories constantly on his own. And then there, you know, it was like tonight's revelation that his campaign manager got $12 million from the Russians. So there's a lot of fodder there.
Is there going to be a Julian Assange type character from WikiLeaks in the series?
Yeah, I think we could find a place for that for certain.
Absolutely. Are you good? You guys good to take some calls?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
All right. All right. Let's say hi to Joe from the Bronx. Hey, Joe. Welcome to Coast to Coast. How are you,
Richard? Yeah, I wanted to ask your two guests now, Van and Pete. What superheroes do you miss working on the most, and what were your earliest influences as far as comic book writing and illustrations concerned?
Good question.
Van, you want to go first?
Sure. I really enjoyed working on Green Lantern Corps, I guess. It was just, you know, to basically have all of the universe to write as, you know, just great in terms of unlimited fuel for the imagination. And growing up, I grew up in a super small town, so I didn't have access to much. I think probably the most influential thing was there was a G.I. Joe series by Larry Hama in the 80s and 90s that was incredibly, incredibly well done. So that was probably the big influence.
How about for you, Pete?
I've worked on a lot of characters, and a lot of them have been fun. I guess the one I'd probably say I miss the most would be Catwoman. I did about a year's run on Catwoman, and that was a lot of fun. I got to do things a little bit differently than I usually do. But as far as influences go, there's so many. One of the first ones, though, was my mom. She She knew I was, you know, I watched the Batman show on TV in the old George Reeves series in black and white. She knew I liked the superheroes. So she found a reprint, not the original, of course, of Action Comics number one, the first issue of Super, you know, that had Superman in it. And I read that thing over and over again. I love that book.
How important is issue number? Thanks for the call, Joe. How important is issue number one in terms of, you know, should I have this hermetically sealed? You know, because issue number one, that's generally, if this thing goes big, this could be worth a lot of money, right?
Yeah, I mean, my attitude on all this is probably like I'm probably acting against my own self-interest, but the way I treat comics is I buy them at the local shop, and there's a little free library on the corner on the walk from my house to the shop. And so I buy comics, I read them, and then when I go back to buy more, I drop off all the comics that I bought previously, just because to me, you know, I'm not a collector. I just get them to read them. But, you know, if people want to buy as many copies of Cryptocracy number one as they can find, seal them up, then, you know, they are more than welcome to.
Well, good luck with that, because it's sold out. Is there going to be a second printing? Do we know?
I think that one is on the way. I've been waiting for official word from Dark Horse, but we will definitely let people know. And, you know, people are always welcome to ask their comic book shop to. Some might have some copies to be found. And then it's also available digitally.
All right. East of the Rockies, Dave is in Burlington, Vermont. Go ahead, Dave. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. I got a question. I'm a novelist myself. Now, when you describe a descriptive text, would that fall in the line of Dash Hamel and those kinds of novels? I'll hang up and listen to your response.
All right, Pete Van, I'm not sure if you understand what he's asking. I certainly don't, but not being from this world.
You know, I guess confusing terms on, you know, what we're talking about are very traditional, you know, comic books, in that it's pages of art with, you know, the text comes in, and, you know, captions and dialogue bubbles. So it's very much, you know, the comic book as you think of them. I certainly think that in terms of tone, the story that we're writing is much more of an action story than, you know, a superhero story. But that's kind of the great thing about comic books, and something that's always worth reminding, you know, people who are new to comic books, is that they're a medium. They're not a genre. So, you know, you can do all types of stories in the comic book format.
All right, Wildcard Line. Nick is in Garden City, New York. I'll try to squeeze you in quickly, Nick. Quick question, comment for Pete Woods and Van Jensen of Cryptocracy.
Yeah, hey, guys. As quick as you can, what advice would you give to someone who wants to try to break into comics, illustrating them and maybe writing them?
Go ahead, Pete.
Sorry, go ahead, man.
I would just say just make comics. I made a 10-page comic. Took it to a comic book convention. The writer Mark Waid saw it and told me I needed to make comics for a living. And, you know, it all started with me just sitting down and making the book myself.
And Van, do you have any advice for Nick in Garden City?
Oh, that actually was Van.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was Van. I'm sorry,
Pete. That was Van. My advice to Nick would be, yeah, practice and do your, like Van said, these days, doing your own thing, publishing it online if you want to, write and draw, just keep at it, and, you know, eventually somebody's going to notice.
Absolutely. Follow your passion. Do you work on different series simultaneously, or is it you're fully dedicated to Cryptocracy until, you know, until the well runs dry, as they say?
Well, I have a benefit as a writer in that I can, you know, art takes way more time. So I'm working on like 17 things at once, whereas, you know, Pete is mostly dedicating his time to this, I think, right, Pete?
Yeah, most of my day is taken up with Cryptocracy, and I'll try to squeeze in, you know, a little side project here and there in my free time to, you know, just to keep me fresh.
Well, Pete Woods, Van Jensen, again, congratulations on Cryptocracy. Issue number 2 is, I presume, still available on bookshelf or comic bookshelves across North America. And we will look forward to issue 3 in September, I'm guessing?
Yeah, well, actually, end of this month.
End of this month. All right, Cryptocracy from Dark Horse. Very quickly, the e-version is available where?
Comixology, I know for sure. Probably a couple other formats as well.
Comixology, all right. Thanks so much, Pete Van. Great speaking with you again.
Thanks for having us, Richard.
All right, when we come back, washing water with inventor Kevin Collier from Salt Lake City. Stay with us right here on Coast to Coast AM.